In some parts of the U.S., today is Indigenous Peoples Day, a little writing of the historic record for the dubious legacy of Christopher Columbus in the Americas. We're not going to get into that today. We are going to talk about Indigenous people, though, in Australia. It's a story about Uluru, the huge red rock in the middle of Australia that's sacred to Aboriginal people. It's also known as Ayers Rock, a tourist destination for decades. There's a fancy resort nearby with tour buses going back and forth daily. But the actual owners of Uluru are the Aboriginal people who live in poverty on the other side of the rock. Today, Tipa Fernandez looks at what Uluru means to that community.
To stand at the base of this massive red rock called Uluru and look up at it is mesmerizing. I'm not the only one with my mouth agape on this warm winter morning. There are dozens of people from all over the world doing the same thing.
I'm Digby Sampson. Yeah, got two kids here, Ava and Lucas, and my wife Louisa.
The Sampson family is getting ready to scale the side of Uluru. It's a sharp ascent. The rock face is smooth. No steps.
Louisa did it when she was similar to our kids' age, and she's always wanted to do it again.
How long will you be?
As long as you like. There's no rush.
Grandparents Andrew and Helen Shoebridge wave their family off.
Bye.
They're not climbing.
You'll be 3 hours.
As we watch the kids tentatively scramble up the first side, Andrew tells me he's done this climb multiple times.
It doesn't look so bad from here, but there are some very, very steep points. And very windy points.
Then his wife Helen jumps in to tell me she isn't climbing for one main reason, and she was clear with her daughter about it. She told her that local Aboriginal people ask that no one climbs the rock because it's sacred to them.
I'm in favour of respecting the Aboriginal people and their need to keep it sacred. But my daughter is very determined.
See, when tourists began coming to Uluru back in the 1950s, the local Aboriginal community was not in charge. All they could do was ask that no one climb. Today, there's a cultural centre nearby that spells out clearly how sacred the rock is and why it offends the Aboriginal owners, the Ananu people, when tourists scamper on it. And there are signs all over the place that say, please don't climb.
I'm Brian Butler. I'm the grandson of an older traditional owner of Uluru.
The term traditional owner is a way of acknowledging that Australia's Indigenous people actually owned the land first, even if today someone else has a title to that land. But in the case of Uluru, the Australian government returned ownership to the traditional owners in 1985. This huge rock has deep spiritual meaning to Aboriginal owners like Brian Butler and his family. As we sit at the base of Uluru, he points up to the top ridge and tells me how the outline resembles a woman lying on her back.
The silhouette of the lady lying, you can actually see her nose and her forehead up there.
Butler's family told him many stories about Uluru as he grew up. Now he lives in South Australia, about 900 miles away, but Uluru is still very important to him.
It's just so moving, just so spiritual.
While he looks on at the climbers on Uluru, he's the picture of serenity. But Steve Baldwin, the manager of the national park land that includes Uluru, is much more blunt. He's non-Indigenous, but he tells me that tourists climbing the rock is very offensive to the Ananu.
They call it a minga, which is ants, and that comes from observing them on the climb.
As I talk to Australian tourists at the base of Uluru, there was this one sentiment expressed repeatedly. A feeling that Uluru was an Australian treasure and they had a right, as Australians, to climb it. Like this guy.
Doing a few stretches, because it's a hard climb. I remember it being hard.
Glenn from Melbourne, who was doubled over touching his toes when I talked to him.
I understand why the Aboriginal people don't want people to climb. I do get that. But I respect that the rock is older than them too. So I'm happy to climb it again and want to do it.
He's come now because of a recent decision by Parks Australia and the Aboriginal owners to close Uluru to climbers in 2019. It's something Aboriginal owners have wanted for a long time. And while Glenn and other tourists might be upset, Parks Australia's Steve Baldwin says they just don't realise what the rock means to Aboriginal people. So he has this one-liner.
I say, what you have done by climbing on that side of the rock where you shouldn't have, by climbing over that sensitive site, it's the equivalent of me abseiling over the Sistine Chapel or climbing over a church.
The decision to close Uluru to climbers was a big deal, Baldwin says.
I was in the room on that day and there were people in tears. It was massive.
He says it came down to data. Fewer than 20% of the tourists who passed through the entrance gate were actually making the climb. So closing the rock to climbers won't be so drastic, he says. There are plenty of other activities for tourists.
You can hire a cycle and cycle around Uluru. You can have a progressive dinner on a double-decker bus at night.
You get the picture. And the local Aboriginal community wants tourists to keep coming. After the land was returned to them by the Australian government, they leased it back to Parks to license and run all the tourism activities. In return, they get 25% of the park entrance fees. I wanted to know what leaders from the local Anangu Aboriginal community thought about the arrangement. So, in the shadow of Uluru, I met with Anangu chairman Sammy Wilson.
You know, visitors come here and they love it, huh?
Visitors love it, but what does your community get?
Me? Oh, I want to do something for the visitors, for young ones, to do a tour.
Very few Anangu are actually tour leaders, he tells me. When, in fact, it's his people who have the history here, his people who have all the stories. The nearby resort knows visitors want some Aboriginal education, so they provide it.
Good morning, folks. Welcome. My name's Leroy. On the bush yarns here, I mostly talk about all the hunting weapons.
At this free daily talk in the resort village, Leroy Lester entertains the gathered tourists with his show and tell about how Indigenous people have survived in the bush and arid desert for millennia.
All my Nana had was a large wooden bowl. She'd leave the little ones in the camp. She'd take the big one out gathering.
Lester is one of the few Indigenous workers at the resort whose family is Anangu, the traditional owners. Couldn't more of his people do jobs like this, Sammy Wilson asks? Instead, the jobs they are offered are mostly menial, he says, like cleaning rooms, jobs that don't pay well.
They don't want to do that job. They want to do a proper job, real job, huh? Not lolly money. We call it lolly. They want to get proper money.
It seems like, you know, from the resort, and there's money being made here around this Uluru. Does your community get much money from this, from all the tourism dollars that come here?
Yeah, someone making money, but it's not us.
The money the local Aboriginal community receives is a share of the park entrance fee, about $20 for a three-day pass. But they say the real money is made at the resort. So why not share some of those profits with the local traditional owners? I pose that question to Eddie Fry, the chairperson of the Aboriginal-run Land Trust Corporation that owns the resort.
In relation to Uluru, that is a matter that we have certainly turned our attention to in the last 12 months. We are working very, very hard on that as I speak.
Fry promises that 1 year from now, the jobs and profit-sharing with the Anangu people would be much better. He says that since taking over the Uluru Resort 6 years ago, they've markedly increased the number of Indigenous workers and started an on-site hospitality training school for Aboriginal people. But most of those slots are filled by Indigenous people from all over Australia, not the local community. Brian Butler, the grandson of an Uluru traditional owner, wants to show me how dire things are for the Aboriginal community who live just on the other side of the rock.
Hello. You're finished over there, you mob.
He used to live here. And every time he comes back, it makes him sad to see the garbage strewn about, the falling down houses, the kids looking unkempt, clothes raggedy. He wishes more of the tourism dollars would be used to bring health, hygiene and education programs here. People can't even afford the basics, he tells me.
You know, you walk around the community in Mutajulu and you've got snotty-nosed kids. Even to give the family a packet of tissues, no way, you don't see it.
Like other Aboriginal leaders, Butler believes good jobs are key to moving people out of poverty. And given there's a massive tourism operation sitting in this rural community's lap, he sees no reason things should be this way. For The World, Deepa Fernandes, Uluru, Australia.
Tomorrow, Aboriginal children are overrepresented in Australia's child protection services. One reason? Domestic violence. But some Aboriginal women are trying to get their husbands to end the cycle of abuse.
He goes out to the communities talking about domestic violence, you know, men don't hit their partners, they're not real men if they do that. Real men stand up and support their wives.
That's tomorrow here on The World.